welcome to the Best Places to Lead show. I am Jerry McNamara, and I am your host. So thank you for tuning in, because we are on a mission to positively impact 5 million people over the next 4 years through better business. Now, listen, I've never met anyone who showed up to work and said, I really want to suck today. Yet so many people are ineffective and disengaged. I look at it, it's not their fault. It's the leader's responsibility to create compelling company cultures where people love to show up and work. That's why we're working with leaders to learn how to build compelling companies that are not only successful, but also enjoyable to work for. We want to create a workplace where employees are so engaged and having so much fun that they get surprised that they still get to get paid for their work. Wouldn't that be amazing? And that's when we know we're winning as a company. So when you're good at work, you have the chance to be great at home, because we're whole people. We can't split these people apart. And so we want to help you become a better spouse, a better parent, a better sibling, a better friend by creating a positive work environment. Ultimately, our goal is to bring more aligned smiles to the world. Wouldn't that be awesome if people were happier, healthier, having more fun? And that's why we gather here weekly on the Best Places to Lead show, so that we can share our insights and we can be better together. So this week, I'm going to continue my sessions on one of the 11 leadership competencies. I've been doing a deep dive on these, one a month. So last month, I broke into decision-making and walked you through a framework that you can use as a leader to make better, more aligned, clear decisions across your whole organization. It's a super great episode. I'm proud of the work that I did there, and I encourage you to go listen to it. This week, we're going to continue on with the frameworks. And so I really think about frameworks as the scaffolding to scaling a great business. And so we're going to call this one the execution edition. So without further ado, if you're ever someone who has wondered, man, I'm not really sure, why is it that some people execute on projects and other people just can't seem to get off the starting line or even to the finish line? They're great starters, they're terrible finishers. This episode is for you, because if you've ever asked, is it me? Is it them? Am I not leading well? Is this person in the wrong seat? Do they not fit the culture? I'm going to try and give you a framework on how we look at execution and how we can assess where the issue is and potentially how we might help that employee to coach forward, because again, no one shows up to work to suck. So let's help them be great. Again, the whole point of this is, why do we have frameworks? Frameworks create consistency across the organization, and it's a really important part of what the leader does. And so let's remove the complexity. Let's create order by sharing our frameworks. In addition, it eases the mental burden of showing up every day. When everyone knows how the rules are clear for everyone, then it's way easier for us to lead people. And again, you get to make logical decisions in advance of situations when you're not under emotional stress. That's a key point, because one of the things I've learned running multiple companies is fear and anger, they make bad decisions. So if you can step out in advance and think about situations logically, create some frameworks and systems around it, then you're going to be in a much better place than if you just act emotionally. The other piece of this is scaling and speed are possible when the rules of the game are clear. I've run a number of high growth companies. I've advised a number of high growth companies. When you're operating in chaos, it's really hard to scale. So let's do the hard work in advance of encountering these situations. I always like to remind leaders what their number one responsibility is. And that is to create a predictable environment for our people so they can make engaged, agile, and autonomous decisions. Think about that. It's amazing. I think we're in a recession. I was on a call earlier today with 7 CEOs, and we were talking about housing market, inflation, interest rates, all these things. We all think we're in a recession. And one of the things that they've researched is over the last 9 recessions, only 9% of companies out of 4,000 actually increased their revenues during a recession. One of the hallmarks was decision-making was driven down to the front lines, the people who are actually doing the work, which means that we have to be really clear and then give people the autonomy to make engaged decisions. That's what it's all about. Now, listen, one of the other things that I've learned as a leader is we may have really clear pictures in our mind of what we want to go see happen. Sometimes we forget to make it come out of our mouth so that other people can be clear on them too. So one of the goals of creating frameworks is that when you go on vacation, no one's bothering you because we know how we're aligned on resources and opportunities, and they can act on your behalf without you even there. And that to me is pretty fun. Okay, so I've outlined 11 leadership competencies. We're doing deep dives on each of them over the course of the year. I'm pulling out one element. This is one element of execution. It's a much larger topic than what I'm just giving you today, but I think this is a really important one for leaders. And so execution and productivity is something that I think about a lot. I think it's important. What is execution? Pretty simply, it's just carrying out the plan, order, or the course of action. This is why we do quarterly strategic plans, so that we can say, what do we think we can do this quarter? What do we want to get done? What are the priorities of the company? And what are the things that we have to think about? It's not just about getting things done and creating velocity. It's about getting the right next thing done to the finish line to help the company achieve its goals and its objectives. Sometimes I start talking too fast. I crack myself up. But it's all about making sure that we do the right next thing and not just the next thing that's on the list. What execution is not? I think this is important too, because a lot of people get this wrong. Busy is not execution. I run into people all the time inside companies. I say, hey, how you doing? And their hair's a little frazzled. And they say, oh my gosh, I'm so busy. And then I ask them, what are you working on? And they're working on all of the things that are urgent and maybe not important, right? They have let the urgent overtake their day-to-day tasks and responsibilities, and they're not thinking strategically of whether these things are actually contributing to our objectives as a company. So don't get tricked into the fact that you're busy. It means that you're executing. Those things are not always congruent. Second is, it's not staying in the passenger seat instead of a driver. In the book, Amp It Up, Frank Slootman, he's built three companies to billion-dollar valuations, an incredible CEO. He talks a lot about there are quiet people inside of companies that sit in the passenger seat. They're not disruptive, but they're also not helping the company very much. We need to have drivers inside of our business that are actually getting the right things done. The other thing, a lot of people get busy doing the easy things instead of the aligned things. And the last one that I always hate is meetings, meetings, and more meetings. And so don't get the time suck of thinking that you're executing when you're having a meeting. A meeting is not execution. All right, I found this really interesting. Why is this important? Why is this such a critical topic? According to a study DI survey, 48% is the percentage that CEOs said they only trust 48% of their senior leaders to deliver on the objectives for the company. I want you to just stop and think about that for a second. It means that a CEO trusts less than 50% of their executive leadership team to achieve the plan that they've laid out. I think that's scary as all get out. Now, the second piece of this is 83% of businesses say that it's important to develop leaders at all levels. Right? It's a no-brainer. We should be doing this. Yet less than 5% of companies have implemented a leadership development across all levels to help with the execution of how we're going to achieve our plan. So we know there's a problem. We think we should do something about it. And yet even the senior leaders inside of a company, we're not executing on closing this gap to help all of our people succeed. So here's what I've developed as I've done my deep dive this month on execution. I call it the 5 T's, and it's a methodology to assess and coach for execution. So the 5 T's, tools, time, training, talent, and tenacity. And I'm going to go through each one of these and take you through so that you can be thinking about answering that question. Is it them? Is it me? Is it environmental factors? Why is someone not executing that's on my team? And let's think about that. So when I think about this, I want to make a distinction here, right? Because I put them in a specific order with tools, time, training, talent, and tenacity, right? That's the coaching framework. But when I think about this from a hiring perspective, and we're trying to evaluate someone's competence, I want you to flip that around. And I want you to think about someone's tenacity. Are they someone who grabs onto something and it gets it to the finish line? Let's look at their talent. Let's assess their talent. What's their previous track record? Are they trainable? You know, we may have training, but if someone isn't trainable, that's really hard. What's their time management look like? I'd ask them about their day, how they organize their day, and the knowledge of tools. If we're bringing them into a technical area and they need to be an engineer or a programmer, I want to make sure that they have alignment with the tools that I'm using inside of my company. And so I do flip this around when I think about hiring, because it's outside in, but when you're coaching, it's inside out. So let's get into this. And I do want to give credit. So one of my mentors, someone that's in our community, the Proven Chaos community, is Captain Rick Hoffman, right? Super impressive guy, retired Navy captain, commanded ships during the Persian Gulf. So amazing guy. Anyway, in my career, I've always used the terms tools and resources. Do you have the tools and resources that you need to succeed? And Rick's thinking on this inspired mine. And he gave me permission that I can use it because he loved that it inspired my thinking. So I thought his description of it was better, which was tools, time, and training. And so I used them. So Captain Rick, thank you for your inspired thinking there and sharing it with us and your community. So first off, when I think about tools, there's three elements of this. One is human capital, right? Sometimes when we ask people to do things or to engage in a project, they may need to have access to people that are higher up than them in the organization. You need to pave the way for them to have access. So one of the questions is, do they have access to the people that they need to execute on the project they're responsible for? The second one is physical capital. Do they have the equipment required to execute, right? So if I want people to do spreadsheets, yet I gave them an abacus, we're going to have a real problem there. That is not their problem. That is my problem. I need to make sure that I get things into the hands of the people that need it to do their job successfully. And then the third is financial capital. Do they have a budget to solve the problem? Sometimes we have to go outside of the organization and borrow some people's brains where we don't have that intellectual horsepower inside our building. But do they have the financial capital? Do they have access to budgets to help solve the problem? Those are all things that we need to be thinking about when we try and hold people responsible for execution. I think time is really interesting, right? So I think there's two sides of time. One is on the leader side, and the other is on the employee side or the person who's executing. So one of the things that I see time and time again inside of companies is we try and do too many things simultaneously. If we would just slow down, if we would just prioritize, I encourage you to make bigger bets on fewer priorities. Focus in on throughput and not activity, because this is all about execution. Now, our job on the leader side is to communicate the strategy. Here's what we're doing as a company. Here are the objectives that we want to achieve. And then we have to be clear about the priorities. Here's the order of operations that we are trying to walk these things through. And guess what? We have operating businesses. So sometimes there's something that comes up that is urgent and important. And so we are going to redirect people to say, you know what? I know that was a priority. Let's put that on pause. We're going to focus in on this now. Now, that's not to say to give you license to start chasing shiny objects. That's not what I'm saying. But if it does rise up to urgent and important, and it's an opportunity, then we should be focusing on executing on it. The second side of this is on the person who's executing. So if your leader is asking you to do something that's outside of the priorities, maybe it feels like a shiny object, maybe it feels an adjacent aligned priority, your job is to communicate. I can do that. Absolutely. Redirect, no problem. but what are you comfortable with falling behind on from our list of priorities? Because if you don't do that on your side, then we're just assuming that you've got it. You're going to execute on all of it. And so you have to make sure that you are managing your time and expectations. And then the other piece of it on the execution side is calendar control. You have to align your day with your priorities. And I encourage people, don't leave it to chance. Schedule time with yourself to work on the specific priorities that you're working on. And I thought it was an interesting conversation that I had with my wife, Rachel. She said, how does a leader control time? It's really on the execution side for them to manage their time. And I said, I can change people's time if I tell them, you know what? I know you'd had four priorities. We're going to take one of them off the board. I give them time back. So I can manage people's times by changing their priorities. And that's why we have to continually check in and make sure that projects are moving and that we have enough time to execute. Remember, that's on our side. Training. I always love this photo. I want to tell you a story about training. So if you're listening to this as a podcast, what's on the screen is a picture of me laying down in the snow with a snowboard attached. My wife took a picture of me when we were in Beaver Creek, Colorado. And what she didn't know at the time was I had knocked myself out. I had fallen on the back of my head. I had knocked myself out. I had bit my tongue. I thought I was going to bite my tongue off. And here's what we do. Because I went the top of the Beaver Creek Mountain. I think it was like 8,537 feet. For some weird reason, I still remember that. And I got on a hill that I had no business being on, being a beginning snowboarder. I think this was the third time I was snowboarding. And we got to the top. And I just rolled over the hill and did my best. And this is what companies and leaders do continually. We hire people, we bring them into the company and into our care. We put them at the top of the mountain with no training. And we say, Maria, Roanne, good luck. Don't hurt yourself and don't hurt the business. And you know what inevitably happens? What happened to me? I knocked myself out. I had a concussion. I literally laid in bed for about a week with a blanket over my head because all I could see was darkness. It was a crazy experience. But don't do that to our people. When we hire people, it's our responsibility to train them on the way we want things to be done. Because at the end of the day, nature abhors a vacuum. And when we are not clear about how we want things done inside of our company, then people just do the best that they could. I was doing the best that I could getting down this hill. I only made it about 125 feet and then had to walk down the rest of the way after I woke myself up. And so I tell that story because it's just such a great example of I was ill-equipped to meet the challenge that was put in front of me. And I don't want to see you do that to our people. There's such an opportunity for us to do that better. And the results are pretty dramatic, right? I think there's so many people that don't invest in training. They say it's important, right? I gave you some stats earlier. 83% of companies recognize they need it. Only 5% of companies have actually done it. This one was startling to me. According to a 2019 study by the Society for Human Resource Management, organizations that invest in employee training and development experience 24% higher profit margins than those that don't. If you, that doesn't perk your ear up as a leader or an entrepreneur or someone that's responsible for putting profits onto the P&L, then I don't know how to get you excited. This is an amazing payoff to invest and train our people. Please take it seriously. Here's another one, another great one. According to a 2016 report by the Association for Talent Development, companies that offer comprehensive training programs have a 218%, two times better, higher income per employee than companies without formalized training. If that doesn't make you get up and get excited about what can I do to put people into places of development. It's why it's the outermost ring on the business acceleration model. Learning and curiosity, which is development, because curious companies, people who are growing and developing, solve problems differently. They innovate their business differently than companies who don't. Those statistics came as no surprise to me. All right. So once we get past tools, time, and training, which, by the way, I'm in charge of as the leader, I control all three of those things. The tools that I give you to do your job, the time by being clear on the priorities, and the training that I give you to be successful, I'm in control of them. The next one that I think about when it comes to execution is talent. So we have to be really ruthless here. We have to evaluate, is this person truly capable to be successful in the role that they've been hired for? Here's the point. When we hire someone, we hire a person to solve a problem for the company. We recognize that there's some type of gap in operational excellence as a company, and we need someone more equipped to handle that. So we have to look and say, first, do they have the intellectual horsepower? Are they smart enough to actually solve the problem that we've brought them in and hired them to do? And we think about things, I'm sure you've heard this before. Do we have the right person, but in the wrong seat? Or do we just have the wrong person? That's a possibility too. And I'll remind people, because I see this time and time again, when it comes to talent, when we are interviewing people, we are constantly hiring for competence, but at the end of the day, we fire for attitude. Their inability to make changes, to grow, to develop, to be coachable, to be trainable, that's the disjoint that gets more and more people fired. One of the things that I've also been thinking about, probably in the last 6 months, because as we do this, we're literally inventing. All of this are my original thoughts of how we can coach on execution. And one of the things that I've noticed inside some of my companies is there are some people inside organizations, they are great if you give them the playbook. They'll run the playbook. They'll execute the heck out of it. And there are some people that are capable of figuring stuff out, and they're actually the ones writing the playbook. They're the senior most leaders inside of companies because you need to be thinking about the business differently. And I thought this was a really good model in assessing talent. So there's something called Bloom's Learning Taxonomy. They just reissued this. I think this is from 1959. They just updated it. And so it's a pyramid that takes people through the different levels of thinking and learning and creativity. And so at the base level, can you remember? Do you recall the facts and the concepts? Seems pretty simple. Can you understand them? Can you explain an idea? The next one is, can you apply it? Can you use the information in a new situation? And then I think you get into the three parts of the leadership pyramid, which is analyze it, the ability to look and to draw connections among ideas. That is a next level part of thinking. The ability to evaluate, to look, to justify or stand on a decision. Can we argue it? Can we defend it from lots of different points of view? And then the last and the highest level of thinking, learning in this taxonomy, Bloom's taxonomy, is can you produce new or original work? And when you think about companies, those are your visionaries. They're creating things out of thin air. They're solving a problem that people hadn't thought about before. And so I think this is a really good way of assessing talent, because if I need someone in leadership, then I probably need them in a place where they're analyzing, evaluating, and creating. And if I need people in middle management or entry-level positions, it's perfectly great that as they're going to develop their skills to start with remembering, understanding, and applying. But our job as leaders is to make sure that we keep on leveling those people up who are in our care to give them the opportunities that they want to pursue. So I think this is a good tool. It was something that I was thinking about, but I just think it's a great way to think about talent, because it's hard to assess talent until people are in your care. We can look at past performance, and I think that's the greatest indicator of future performance, but I do think about it that way. All right, the fifth T in this model is tenacity. And I think this is the most important T, because if you think about it, if I've answered the question that you have the tools, time, training, and talent, I've got to make sure that you're going to kick and fight to honor your commitments, to execute. Does it bother you to not get projects to the finish line? You're my type of person. That's really exciting to me if you have that tenacity. Because here's the point. Over the course of my nearly 30-year career, I'm getting old. I'm getting to be the old white guy in the room. It's horrible. But I've seen less talented people without the tools and with no training create magic and execute because they had a strong passion for the why behind that they were trying to pursue, why they were doing it, the impact that they wanted to go make. And they were resourceful. They had the tenacity to get there. Some people call this grit, perseverance. It's all in the same space, right? And I think that's the most important T. I'm going to share this too, because again, we create in public, and I think it's perfectly good that we do that. I think about a 6T, which is related to tenacity, but where does tenacity come from? And James Clear has done some research around this, as there's some new psychological thinking around it. But how we see ourselves affects our behaviors and our habits. Right? Let me say that again. How we see ourselves. If I'm the type of person who finishes projects, and that's the self-talk, I'm probably going to be tenacious in my approach because it's going to impact my behavior and habits. So if we want to change our behavior and you're trying to coach someone, so you feel like they have the tools, time, training, and talent, but for whatever reason they're missing, and you're going to dig in here because you believe this is a person worth investing in, to help them change their behavior, we have to get them to see themselves in a different light. So I will become the type of person who executes would be the mindset that we want to instill. And I've shared this before. I say my morning intentions every day. It's not by accident, because I want to make sure that I see myself and the impact that I'm making in the world aligned with my intentions. And so positive self-talk is super important here. And if you're someone who is frustrated, you're frustrated with yourself, I'm just not getting it to the finish line. My advice to you is take daily progressive actions. Work on your mindset. Work on the idea that, hey, I'm going to become the person who executes. Maybe the daily progressive action is I'm scheduling time with myself for 30 minutes to make sure that I execute on the process that I'm trying to achieve. All right, let's talk about using the framework. So this is you focused, and this is the leader, meaning it's you focused on you. So we have to own our part. If someone isn't executing, have I done my part in making sure that they have the tools, time, and training to be successful? I talk about this a lot. We are only half of the equation. I'm only 50% of every relationship that I'm in. I want you to ask yourself, have I owned my 100% of my 50% of the side of the equation? And if you've done that, then you can feel good that you've given that person every opportunity to be successful. The second part on this is universe focused. We have to ruthlessly assess talent. And sometimes that's difficult for people to do because they feel like they're judging a person. And we're not judging the person. We're assessing their talent to be able to solve the problem that we've hired them for. And if they're not getting it done, that's okay. We love them. Compassionate leadership. We're big fans of compassionate leadership. We have to help them get to a better place, either by putting them in a different seat, helping them get hired at another company, whatever that may be. But for the sake of the company and for execution and achievement of the objectives that we're trying to chase, we have to ruthlessly assess talent. Is this person truly capable of solving the problem the company needs today? One of the places where I see this show up time and time again is, you know, when you start a company, you look left and you look right, and the only people that are around are your friends and family. And you say something like this: "Hey, Kurt, I have this new thing. Can you come help me start it?" And then it starts working. You're like, "Holy smokes, Kurt, can you believe this? I can't believe we're doing this. It's working. Kurt, you're going to be the COO." And Kurt's a really great COO at a $1 million company. But then it keeps on working. And Kurt's not a great COO at 5 million or 8 million. And we're afraid to really have that hard conversation to say, "Kurt, I think the company might have outgrown your talent and your ability to contribute at this level company. And in order for the company to grow, we have to have that hard conversation." And so I understand that this is hard, but if you want to continue to grow and develop, be ready to have those conversations. All right. The last one is them focused, right? Tenacity is a them thing. I can influence it, but are they really going to show up with the tenacity that we need for them to get things to the finish line? And so we have to make a decision. If they have the tools, time, training, and talent, do we want to invest in them or do we want to give up and move on? So we got to think about the tenacity in the talk. Are they coachable? Do they want to get better? Are they saying the right things? And I would tell you, don't pour into people who don't want more for themselves than you want for themselves. It's a very hard, dead-end road that will only serve to frustrate you. And so the last T is them focus. So we got to have those conversations. Do you want to take on this challenge? Do you want to take on these behavior changes so that you can execute and contribute to the company? Again, I would tell you the first four I can work through. The fifth one is usually a non-starter for people. If you don't have the tenacity to bring projects to the finish line, then you're probably not going to be very useful inside many companies, whether it's this company or some other company. And I'm just going to remind you, make sure that we're building our frameworks. Frameworks are literally the scaffolding that allows you to build a great company. It eases the burden, takes the pressure off. People stop borrowing your brain. "Hey, do you got a minute?" So no, we're really clear on how we do business because we've shared with people the framework. So make sure that it's written. Make sure that it's clear. Make sure that it's easy to understand so that you can teach it. That's why I like to train in public. I'm trying to teach something that I just created out of thin air. Lots of research, hours and hours went into this. And is it easy to try? So how are we making sure that we're executing against the frameworks that we are having people do? I come back to it. Most people are looking to try and scale their business. How do we get better? How do we grow the company? How do we create more opportunity? How do we create more economic opportunity for everyone? And that's what we're trying to do. And so that's what all of these are about. So I hope you really enjoyed the execution framework. And certainly if you have any questions, I'd invite you to reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's a great place to interact. We are very active over there. Maria, my assistant, she's my backup in case I miss messages and things. But I would love to hear your thoughts on this model. Maybe put it into use and send me a note and say, "You know what? This really isn't working for me. I don't know. Maybe I got it wrong. I think it's pretty good, but maybe you can help me make it better." And so I think that would be super fun. Now, listen, last piece of this, because I'm not good at asking for help, because I'm one of those high achievers. So I have to get better at that. I'm going to continue to work getting better at this, which is to ask for your help. We are on a mission to positively impact 5 million people over the next 4 years. And so if this was useful to you, I want you to share it with your leadership team. I want you to send it to someone that, you know what, you can't figure out why your friend can't execute. Maybe this will help them build that framework and understanding and awareness so that they can take action differently. And so I'd love to see you join us on LinkedIn. I'd love for you to share the podcast, write a review. It would all be great. And I'm so grateful for all of you. And that's it for this week. So we will be back next week And I hope you join us then. Super fun.